on Piers Corbyn, the Let London Live party candidate for mayor of London. And I got to be in this position because I, like many others, are determined to stop this insane crackdown on our rights and jobs. And I got my understanding of what's going on about this mainly from just seeing events, but partly because I understood the climate story, i.e. the claim that Britain and the world are warming because of man, is just false. But you see, this story is used as the background ideology for the new normal and the World Economic Forum. Everywhere they go, they say, oh, we have to do this to save the planet, right? So it's an ideology to take over vulnerable, mentally vulnerable.
Yeah, but for many people, they don't see that at all, Piers. The lockdowns and et cetera about a virus, nothing to do with climate change.
No, but I'm saying how I got to that position. No, we go on to the demonstrations or talk to people about the effect of lockdowns. We don't talk about climate. If it comes up, we talk about it, yes. But I'm saying if you look into the background, and the reason why it was obvious to me that there's something suspicious going on was because of the World Economic Forum, of course, go along with climate and then all of a sudden pop up with this stuff, which is really a more effective way of control than getting people upset about climate.
Okay, you're a party, Let London Live. What do you stand for?
We stand for, I'm just looking for our list of demands, but I remember them anyway, but it'd be quicker. Okay. First, we want to end all the lockdowns and the COVID restrictions. Secondly, and this is an integral part of it, we want to spend more money. We want the NHS to spend more money on dealing with people who've got serious illnesses, such as cancer, who have been excluded from the NHS under the COVID restrictions. So we would save lives. So together with those policies, we'll save jobs and lives, whereas policies of government, in fact, are destroying jobs and killing people. We believe no serious illness should be left behind. We're also against all the COVID passporting and rules and tracking associated with that.
What about the past year? Because this has been going on for a year now. Yeah. What's your journey through that year been? Because I know you've been campaigning, you've tried all sorts of different tactics, including things like turning up with people in Oxford Street and having kind of drinking parties in the open air, things like that. What have you been up to? And can you just tell us a few of the highlights of your year?
Yeah, no, that's great. I started off in Glastonbury doing little rallies and demonstrations around Glastonbury Town Centre Cross. There's about six of us, and the police would turn up and usual, move on, do this, do that, and fixed penalty notices and all that nonsense. Then there were some things going on in London, but not very much, but I decided to go back to London to join them and see if we could get things moving there. And then we did step by step. But we tried to think of anything we could to get people to understand that what they were suffering was part of something bad, and therefore they ought to join our movement to stop these wrongs happening on us. And one of the things which worked very well was our drink against the COVID con thing. It's when they said pubs had to close early and stuff like that, so we deliberately went outside them and drunk and danced and played music outside them and so forth. And that got a lot of support. But other things we've been doing, anti-masking actions, walking around with a big poster saying, you don't need to mask, if you're upset, you don't need to. And we produced a little card showing people they don't need to mask, an exemption card, which is very useful and very popular among youth, especially young girls who don't want to be masked up but want to show their faces. Other things we've done, of course, is demonstrate outside. We demonstrated about lots of buildings, but we went one outside the National Education Union to say to them, look, you people are involved in mental torture of children and you should end it, and giving out leaflets outside schools, which have got a lot of interest. And that issue is now getting a lot of traction. And we're hoping to work on that. So join together all the different ways in which people are being hammered by the COVID story. And the movement now, I could say, there's at least 100,000 people around the country who are willing to take action of some sort and have turned up on demonstrations. So, because a lot of them don't all travel all the way, there must be probably 500,000 people who are really clearly on our side on this. Now, that is not a majority of the population, but we are making headway. And when we interact with people now, it's getting a bit easier. There are some people, though, who are more brainwashed than ever. There's a hardcore of people who are seriously brainwashed and difficult to get through to.
So when you are out on the streets,
vaccine, they might listen.
Yeah, when you're out on the streets, Piers, do you ever get people haranguing you, you know, sort of having a go?
To an extent, yes. Generally speaking, on our election campaigns, we've had very good reception. I'm not joking. I mean, people are there saying, we're really glad you're doing this. We don't want the current mayor. He's wasted our time. He's caused joblessness. But when we make speeches, we do get attacked sometimes. We've had two physical attacks in the last 2 weeks. One of them in Uxbridge, I'm speaking on the megaphone, and I started saying the BBC was spreading, you know, false propaganda. And this guy just attacked me, just ran towards me with his fist, trying to, I don't know, knock the megaphone out of my hand, I think. But he was intercepted by somebody. And then we had a similar type of thing, not quite so ferocious, in Hyde Park, Speaker's Corner, when we were speaking on a megaphone on the grass at Speaker's Corner.
Well, it's a lot of effort you're putting in, but actually, yes. Let London Live doesn't really stand a chance of getting anywhere in these London elections, does it?
Well, it does, yes, because we have a message which people understand when they know it. Question is getting through to them. And furthermore, we're the only ones with anybody of any numbers on the ground doing anything. The Labour Party's active base of campaigners doesn't seem to be there at all. I mean, I haven't seen any of them anywhere. And normally at this stage, they would be giving out leaflets. So they're relying on just deliveries through the post and whatever they can get on the media. Our social media campaign is stepping up right now. So seriously, we could win. I know it's difficult to believe. We were 1,000-1 against yesterday and we're 250-1 against today. If we carry on at that rate of change, we'll be miles ahead soon. But
do you stand a chance of actually getting members of the Assembly or not? I mean, yes, obviously, yeah. You know, Mayor is the top prize, but what about some of the smaller cherries?
Oh, yeah. We should certainly get on in terms of the list. We should get enough percentage in the list, and on top of the list, our list candidates.
So how does that work? Just explain for people.
Well, people have three votes in these London mayor elections, or four in a way. You've got a vote for the mayor, and for that you have two votes. You have your first choice and your second choice. Then for your assembly representative in these super constituencies, and there's 14 of them in London, which comprise about two or three boroughs each, we have candidates, not in all of these super constituencies, but some of them. And then and you have a vote for a constituency candidate, and you also have a vote for your party list. So you say, the party list I want is X, and you put a tick, I let London Live. And if those get, and then they're shared out among all the lists in the votes. So some of those votes, like the, well, I don't know, the Dustbin Boniface or whatever he's called, won't get anywhere. But, you know, we should get a substantial percentage there. Because we're getting support everywhere. I'll tell you, it's quite surprising. You know, people come and say, yes, Piers, we're glad you're standing. We want you. We're going to vote for you.
What about your legal position, though? Because I know that you've had all sorts of things like fines, being arrested several times. Looked like you were going for the Guinness Book of Records at one point. what's going on with your legal cases? Because it would be very sad if, you know, you were jailed or something and you couldn't take up your job as mayor.
Fair point. But back onto the figures, when my brother stood for leader of the Labour Party, he was 400-1 against at the start, and he won. So, you know, the right campaign, because we're not lockdown light, for example, and he defeated all those Tory-like candidates. I mean, we have clarity, which others don't have. So there we are. But back to being jailed or whatever. No, there's nothing there that they can jail me for. You see, the arrests are quite a low-level sort of thing. They're all about fines. We're not going to pay any fines. True, if I don't pay a fine, I could go to prison instead, which is something we have to think about. But currently, they're backing off these big £10,000 fine, and they keep adjourning cases or not having them or dropping them. Of the 15 arrests, we've dealt with, I think, about six of them. We've had two in court. One was an absolute discharge. Another one was no case to answer. And then they've dropped the Sheffield ones and a couple of others. What will that make? I don't know where we got to now on the 15, but they have. And the leafleting one, that complete nonsense, the police have dropped that. They know there's nothing in there at all. So, you know, they're trying to adjourn various things, but they're never going to lead to prison then.
Now, what about in Bristol? Because I know you came to Bristol, you basically started to speak, and this is last, October or something, November. And just as you started to speak, a whole load of police turned up and threw you in the back of a van. So how's that all going?
Well, I'm going to appear at Bristol Magistrates Court on the 22nd of April. So I'm looking forward to seeing you there, Tony.
That'll
be fun. I mean, you know, we can make a little speech, talk to people, have a bit of rallying about whatever we've got to do. But again, they're just going through a process hoping to intimidate others, but it's not working. But it's important that I've been resisting systematically, you see. Although we paid a lot of money to barristers and so forth, getting an absolute discharge on the first case of its kind was really quite significant. So people realise, well, okay, it ain't such a big deal after all, is it? So people have been more willing after that to face the police. And no one needs to get arrested anyway, because the number of people who get arrested on any one of these demos is less than half of 1%. I mean, you know, if you don't want to be arrested, just don't walk to the front.
Okay, so you're now standing against your brother's own party in London. Yeah. What do you make of the Labour Party since Jeremy departed?
Well, he hasn't, of course, departed. He's been shoved aside and declared he's not a member of the Labour group of MPs, which is a disgrace. But I would say the Labour Party, as it is now, has completely lost its right to represent the working class and does not do so. Because people we meet in Southall, Tower Hamlets, Camden, whatever, they all say the same thing. We do not want Sadiq Khan back, and Labour doesn't represent us anymore. You see, what are they? They're trying now to be a national government along with Keir Starmer. So, you know, my brother, who wouldn't have truck with those things because of the economic strictures that would go with that, even if he goes along with lockdown, you know, he's not the sort of person they want as a fellow traveller. So they want him out, out, out. And that means the Labour Party is just going to retract into a shell.
What about your own party, though? Because I know that we've had a Labour Party councillor up in Manchester actually endorsing you, which is a bit strange. I wonder how long he'll keep his job.
Well, he's a Labour councillor, been there for 2 years. A great guy. Omar Ahmed is his name. He's Muslim he's not especially religious, but he is a Muslim, for example. And I would say he's quite representative of the base of support which Sadiq Khan thinks he's got. But I would say that is the base of support Sadiq Khan has now lost and is losing daily. So I think in a couple of weeks' time, Sadiq Khan will be spending all his time chasing his base. And he won't turn up to other parts of London other than certain areas where he thinks he's going to get his support. So it is very significant, that. And I think other councillors must be thinking the same thing. And we know Labour members, which were fellow followers of Jeremy and used to be relied on to give out leaflets, are not doing that. They are just not there doing it.
It's certainly true. I can tell you, it's certainly true amongst the Bristol group on Bristol City Council. We've had something like 4 Labour councillors now either resign or defect to other parties because of their disillusion with the Blairite mayor, Marvin Rees, and the bullying that's going on within the Labour group. I mean, this isn't the Britain you and I grew up in, Piers, is it? Where you've got political parties involved, particularly Labour, in massive. All sorts of accusations, not just with councillors, but with staff members at the council being bullied day after day and just saying, well, we can't take this anymore.
No, the tactics of New Labour at personal level are abominable. I mean, absolutely abominable. I mean, you're right. In the 70s and 80s, these type of things were just not heard of. I mean, you know, we had, well, to be fair, most Tories then were reasonable people as well. You know, we had rational discussions. But now, this is not the way of the world. We are entering or in a relative dystopia.
What do you mean by that?
That democracy and freedom of expression are being attacked on a daily basis. So whereas in the past you could have rational discussions with people, now you're labelled as, you know, a COVID denier or a vax denier or whatever. And of course you're told that what you're suffering now is a necessity to save us all from something or other. So we have a system of, it's ideological control. It's a contagion fear which is being imposed upon us, as was done in Germany by Hitler's aides before the war.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because
the Jews, you know?
Well, right now, Piers, over in France, you're not allowed to walk out of your front door after 7 p.m. in the evening. If you do, you'll be arrested and thrown in jail. And you're also not allowed to leave your village or your town. And if you do, you have to produce papers. So this is very much like, under Vichy France.
Exactly.
Occupation.
Vichy France, the ones who betrayed. Well, you can argue what they were doing, but they were shot afterwards. When Hitler lost the war, had he won the war, well, of course, they would be in charge now, wouldn't they?
That's right.
They seem to be in charge now in the form of Macron.
I mean, the other thing, of course, about France, these are our brothers just across the channel. They were doing an amazing job with their yellow vests in the run-up to all of this, weren't they?
They were. I was totally impressed. But how come, have the yellow vests run away or they got in prison? What's happened to them?
Well, they've been fined out of existence. Every time they've been going towards doing something, they're stopped by the police, and then they're just basically, well, that's what's happened. They're still able to organise, but only be able to talk to each other. As soon as they do anything, the riot police turn up, arrest them all, and impose massive fines on them. At least that's what I've heard from my contacts over there.
Yeah,
France is looking pretty scary, actually.
It is. I find it very scary. Well, that can all come here unless we stop it.
So, also, I was looking this week at some filming of a demonstration to see, I think you were there as well, Piers, where a Sky TV assistant that was working with the Sky TV crew.
Yeah.
Seemed to actually get involved in trying to start a fight. And then he was seen chit-chatting in the whispering in the ears of police and pointing various people out for them to go and try and grab an arrest. So what can you just take us through that? What do you see and what do you think was happening there?
Well, I see somebody in there who's either with or working with Sky TV, who's an agent provocateur, who was trying to foment conflict. But they were doing this, it seems, in collaboration with the police. So he was shoving somebody else towards the police, and then sort of there was fighting going on between him and the police, the person who was being shoved, and then that guy ran off. But the attempt was obviously to try and foment a big conflict, and maybe they wanted lots of people to pile in, which they didn't. And then afterwards, this guy that had been doing the shoving was seen with the Sky crew. And you could see in a picture, clearly they had some sort of relationship with the police and the Sky crew. That's a minimum.
Well, wasn't he? Maybe he was just talking. I mean, he could have been just chatting to the journalists about it.
No. Well, he was physically shoving people into the police. And that's it. Have a look at the footage. I mean, it's been closely, you know, the stills in it and so on. Now, my view of that is they were creating trouble in order to make footage, I think.
The thing is, Piers, that everything is sort of slowly relaxing at the moment, isn't it? It looks like we're going back to normal in a couple of months.
Well, I don't think we'll be back to normal in a couple of months. The government want to sort of lull people into hopes of normality, but at the same time they're whispering threats of a new strain and so forth. Now, these new strains are just random changes in viruses which happen all the time and represent nothing, but they've been used as an ideological contagion fear thing. I think in a month or two's time, what we'll find is that a lot of people who've taken the vaccine will have got ill, and that will be blamed on a sort of COVID coming in or something, new COVID, and that will be justified to not do the relaxations which they're talking about. And that's the time when there's going to be big resistance and conflict, because people desperately want their jobs and lives back. So we'll be going to the Cup semi-final on the 18th in Wembley to rally people in a united way. We're going to say rally against the vax passports and testing, and call for full compensation for anyone who gets injured or dies from the vaccine. The government has to fully compensate.
We've got vaccine passports coming along too. Do you think that'll catch on? I mean, that's something they're pushing very hard on this, aren't they?
They are. It's about control, Tony. They want control, control, control. And as you said, producing your papers in France or anything. Well, they said produce the papers in Britain. Where's your vaccine passport, sir? You know, it's horrific stuff. When we don't need a vaccine passport, we don't even need a vaccine, because the vaccine itself is not a vaccine, and people can be cured of these COVID-like symptoms with chloroquine and zinc or ivermectin, which have no side effects, while the vaccine does have side effects. So why are not people told these choices?
Well, we did hear a little news item yesterday about ivermectin, because a whole load of European doctors have taken the issue to court because they've been told they can't prescribe ivermectin. Oh, they're saying, no, actually, we insist on being able to do it, and we want a legal ruling to say we can, which seems bizarre, actually, about a substance which was proved in the SARS-CoV-1 outbreak in 2004 to be the best treatment for SARS-CoV.
Exactly. No, spot on, Tony, for knowing that history, yeah, and sussing it out. No, that is right, and it's insane. You have to go to court to argue that. I mean, come on, because stuff is sold in chemists all the time. You don't have to argue about your right to take it. It's got warnings on it, so you know what it is. But, you know, it hasn't been withdrawn from circulation, to my knowledge.
Anyway, we can actually get bogged down by the minutiae, you know, the little ifs and but things about which vaccine, which not vaccine, which ivermectin or whatever. Is
well,
it good
or
isn't it? But,
ivermectin
well,
is,
but look, what I'm saying here is, the thing is that you don't understand why it's important unless you see the bigger picture. So can you just take a step back from all of this for a minute and tell us what you think is really going on?
Well, the bigger picture is that the world economy, the world capitalist economy, is crashing or crashed. And in order to stop a terminal crash, they want to reduce average wages and therefore and put more control to mega corporations who will hold down wages. So they need to actually destroy middle and small businesses, which they're doing very effectively with this this method. The World Economic Forum indeed have spelled out what they want, and this is what they're going for. So it's mega corporation control, or control by whoever controls mega corporations, but whatever. They don't need national democracies. They need international diktats. And, of course, what they're doing now is a perfect model of that. So that is the driving thing underneath it all. Now, different things could be done. They could write off all debt or whatever. But, you see, that is not their way, because they want to stay super rich and stay super powerful. Now, within all that, it's not going to be a smooth ride, because the Chinese government might have different views to Wall Street. Or it may be that the Chinese government, in fact, have penetrated and taken over capital on Wall Street. So really what's happening is a world economic domination by China, which isn't just in terms of cash flow, but in terms of dictatorship, which includes social credit control, where you've got all your measurements upon you and you'll be able to get on a tube train only if you've been a good person.
Well, there's also this, a lot of people say, a spiritual side to this. We've been very, very isolated. And obviously people need human contact. We are social animals, and it's had, I think, a terrifically negative spiritual effect on people.
Yeah. Well, I agree with that completely. I mean, I meet people in the street who say, you know what I mean? They look ill. They do look ill. And I said, look, what are you doing? She said, oh, I'm just wearing the mask because, you know, to protect the mother or something. I said, look, you ain't protecting anybody. That mask doesn't stop anything. In fact, it makes you ill because you're keeping your toxins in there and so on. But they carry on with these things. But you're right. It's making people ill. And when some of those people have been locked up more or less 24/7 in flats, when if they come out at any time, they're going to get seriously ill, because they haven't had vitamin D, their immune systems are going to be in a real mess. They'll catch anything that happens outside, and they may even start dying. Just like when Europeans went to Australia, the Aborigines were dying like flies from smallpox. I mean, they were dropping down in the street from smallpox, which is horrific. Now, I don't want to exaggerate things, but I want to say that people who've locked up and been isolated are not protecting themselves at all. They've got a mix, as you said. We're social creatures. Man is a social creature, and people's resistance to things does develop. I mean, I remember by interaction. I remember as a kid, anybody in the town, in the village, who had mumps, you were sent there by your parents to get mumps. You went there as a child to get mumps, and you had these mumps parties. And then you got mumps and your face bloomed up a bit, and then you got over it. But it meant you didn't get it later, because if you get it later, it makes you infertile, you see. And that's a better way of doing it than playing around with vaccines, in my opinion. Have mumps parties. Just an example. You see, the human body has an incredible immune system. I mean, animals, there's no animal in the world which has a mask. So they don't need masks to hold out anything. You have a nose to stop dust, but your immune system deals with viruses and says, like, wants this one or doesn't want that one. Masking is just stupidity. It's mental control.
What about the international situation? Because I've been looking at some of the evidence. Well, I mean, for example, 2 weeks ago, the Russians pulled their ambassador out of Washington. It's the first time this has ever happened. Yeah. Actually, even during the Cuban Missile Crisis, it never happened. Right the way through the Cold War, it never happened. But the Russians have now said that we have no meaningful bilateral relations with the United States. So after President Biden said that he thought that Putin had no soul, and and that that he was a killer, Putin was a killer, that they withdrew their ambassador. So for the last 2 weeks, there's been no Russian ambassador in Washington. Now, this is unprecedented, and I find so extraordinary is that there's been virtually zero coverage of it. Just today, a few hours ago, the Russians announced that he's not going to be going back unless there's any kind of real move by the United States to have proper relations with the Russians. Now, this is a slow step towards war. Obviously, this is something which we tried to avoid all the way through the Cold War, and he managed to do it. But it seems now that, if the there is no Russian ambassador in Washington, Piers, and the BBC's not really reported it. I mean, it's on their website, but it wasn't on the bulletins. This looks a little bit like a slow slide to something much bigger than just a little, a few little bangs in Syria or Iraq or something.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think there's some things I find puzzling. You see, World Economic Forum, one of their top shots, said back in April, he said, we can only have a new world order if we have Russia, China and the USA all on board. And I said in a speech, well, they're not all on board, so it can't work. However, they're proceeding. Now, Russia have said, Putin was laughing. He said, look, this stuff you're putting forward in World Economic Forum is nonsense. It's laughable. He said it can't work. And, can it or not? However, that being the case, what's he doing producing vaccines other than to sell them to people in the West, of course? But, there's a contradiction. They should be saying in Russia, well, we don't need vaccines. We do exercise, we eat, people eat healthily, and we've got vitamin D. So there's a contradiction. But clearly the Russians are not on board with something. And maybe this is another example. If they're not going to work to keep peace with the US of A, what are they doing? I mean, are they going to work with China in order to take over the world, or what are they saying?
I think
there's a lot of things going on. Because the Russians don't have much military effect, but the Americans have, and the Chinese are getting an increasing military effect day by day.
I noticed that Austrians are buying a load of the Russian vaccine, and apparently it's a lot cheaper than the Pfizer one and the AstraZeneca one. So what I think they're doing, Piers, with the production of their Sputnik V vaccine is, number one, they produce what is, many people say, by far the best of all of the vaccines. And the other one, they have been developing this, this vaccine, apparently for SARS, since 2005 and 2004, when there was the original SARS outbreak. So they have had the proper amount of time to actually develop a vaccine, whereas the Western ones all seem to have been rushed. And slowly but surely, the world is waking up to the fact that the Sputnik V vaccine is, if you decide you're going to have it for whatever reason, whether that's right or wrong, that this is the one to have, and the Russians have basically stolen the march on everybody. But anyway,
that's true.
Anyway, so finally, where can people find you and follow you, Piers, and see what you're up to?
You come to letlondonlive.org, or also the same website they're joined together is corbynforlondon.com, and stopnewnormal.net, which was the precursor of these things, but still going, and quite often the best place to get lists of events. We have daily events. You can turn up, rally, give out leaflets, take bundles of leaflets, give them out in localities, and we're getting rid of tens of thousands every day. We were in Walthamstow today, and we're going to be in Croydon East tomorrow, and on Saturday we're going to be in Hounslow and in Richmond, where we're going to meet in Richmond at about 2 o'clock and get to the river at 2:30, and that should be great fun.
Can you just remind us when you're going to be in Bristol?
The 22nd of April, and whatever happens there, I will be glad to join in.
All right, Piers Corbyn, thanks very much for joining us.
And thank you very much, Tony, for interviewing. Thank you.